Is that really 40 years ago?
I pulled...
Is that really 40?
That was 40 years ago.
40 years ago?
Now, there's something that I found in my research that I had forgotten. Lester Teal, in 1970, 5 years earlier, set that record. You beat the record by a few percent in 1975, and your old buddy, Gina Yeager, in Hertzler's Very Easy, flew 3,900 kilometers and flew a lot further than you did here. And the reason that she did that is she didn't weigh anything, and they could put more fuel in it so it could fly longer. And Gina beat Dick's record by a bunch. Now, I think that Gary Hertzler went on a diet. You know, in those days, it was okay to do this sexist thing. You know, that's not. But anyway, Gary Hertzler, he took 9 years, but he went on a diet, and he took the same airplane, and he flew it farther than Gina did, and he holds the current record in C-1A.
Yeah, he flew it coast to coast.
This is closed course.
The straight line distance?
No, this is closed course. The whole page is closed course. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
But there's another record, Dick. Didn't you fly coast to coast to Florida?
Oh, he flew Alaska to Puerto Rico.
Now, the next record we set was in Bert's prototype, Long Easy.
I flew
from Anchorage, Alaska to the British West Indies. And it was 33...
You did a closed course record from Mojave to Bishop, back and forth.
That's right.
33 hours.
It was 33 and a half hours.
Same time as the Lindbergh flight in 1927.
It was exactly the same time to the minute, but we flew a little farther because the airplane was a little faster. But as it turned out, 33 and a half hours. At that time, I thought I could do anything. I said, what, 33 all day, all night, no big deal at all.
No autopilot. If you go to sleep, you die.
And the fatigue darn near killed me. I had hallucinations. I had gremlins running around talking to him. It scared the heck out of me there for a while.
The same thing that Lindbergh saw out on his wing during his flight to Paris, those same guys showed up on Dick Ferry. Didn't they?
And they did. And the guy. And here I'm sitting there so darn tired that I just could hardly stay awake. And this little guy is sitting on the canard right there. It's dark at night, and he's talking to me. And we're having a conversation. And he says, I'm going to kill you. Another thing that you got really, really tired, and here's the thing that really bothered me a lot. You've gone through the smelling salts, and you've wet washcloth, and you hit yourself, and you've gone way beyond that. And you're so darn tired that this guy, he sits there and he says, hey, Dick. And he's telling me, I already crashed. He described it. He fell asleep. The airplane rolled, impacted, went into orbit. Described it in bloody detail. Some guy's talking to me on the canard. And then what really got me was, he says, Dick, you're already dead. Come with me. And I was so tired, I would have given anything for 5 minutes of sleep. He says, come with me. And I'm very reluctant to do that. And then he said something. He says, it's okay, Dick, because everybody that dies, that leaves planet Earth, they all feel exactly the same way. So you're normal. So just close your eyes, just let it relax, and I will take you off to wherever this weird guy was from. I don't know. And boy, did that scare me. Then we started to learn about fatigue and how to deal with it. And it was one of the learning things that obviously led up to the successful 9-day, 3-minute and 44-minute flight around the world with nobody that helped me.
On that 33-hour flight in the Long Easy, okay, about halfway through that, Dick's making another pass. And he gets on the radio and he says, oh, I thought you might be interested in this, but I kind of relaxed trying to get a little rest, and I push my feet out like this. And when you do that, both rudder pedals put the rudders out, and you have wheel brakes. And he said, Bert, I hate to tell you, but we don't have any brake on the right side. I have a good brake on this side. It's flat over here. I don't have a wheel brake. I won't be able to keep it on the runway when I land, and I'm going to be kind of tired. So I just thought I'd tell you guys. Okay, what did we do?
So what did we do?
Mike and I jumped in the Tiger, and you jumped.
No, you
jumped on a motorcycle.
You and I got on a motorcycle, and Sally flew the Tiger.
Sally flew the Tiger. Okay,
and
I told Sally to land on the runway, and then put her feet off the runway rudder pedals, and just sit there because we had a crosswind. Okay, and we knew that it would turn into the wind and go off the runway, and it did. And I was riding a motorcycle.
You were driving a motorcycle.
Honda, right?
I was on the back.
He was on the back, and you had a broomstick.
No, I had my hands.
The broomstick was later with Voyager.
You pulled up right next to the wingtip. We're going 80 miles an hour or something. I grabbed a hold of the Tiger's wing, and Sally got on the far brake, or the brake that wouldn't work, and you got on the motorcycle brake, and we steered her to a stop.
Let me correct you. Actually, at 80 miles an hour, we could steer fine. We had rudder control. It's when we got down less than about 35 that you couldn't control it. So Mike, on the motorcycle, and I was looking over my shoulder and watching where the Tiger was going. All I had to do was speed up to make it turn right and slow down to make it turn left. And we found out real quick that we can keep that airplane on the runway in about 16 hours when Dick comes back and lands.
You guys were doing that when I was talking to some gremlin?
Yeah, that's right. We were. We practiced.
And we did. We ended up steering him on a perfect straight line, kept him right on the edge of the runway using a motorcycle.
We did. Yep. We stopped on the center line.
And you know, I checked the FAI record book, and it says in there that the pilot must live 48 hours after landing. But it makes no mention at all prohibiting steering the airplane with a motorcycle.
You want to go to slides, or can we talk about Voyager?
Let's go to one more and see what's
okay.
on it.
Okay.
We've got plenty of time, I think.
Yeah.
Next one. Oh, this looks like a posed picture. It was a candid picture. I don't know who took it, but we didn't have cell phones. It was 25 years before most people had cell phones. We're calling back home and letting everybody know that we have a new record. And for some reason, we were posed. That's go on to the next slide. Okay, and the caption here is, which tent has a very easy forum? And, next slide. Oh, you guys don't realize what a big thing it was when these airplanes showed up. Now, this I took this picture off of a postcard. Somebody made a postcard on it. In fact, I put the back of it in the corner. And it's called A Nest of Very Easies. This is 1977, which is the first year. Keep in mind, I waited a year to build the Continental Very Easy. I released plans, and now the next Oshkosh, after I released plans, four of them showed up at Oshkosh. And we decided to park them all together. And, you know, the Very Viggins felt lonely, so I parked it there too. But now, what I want you to see on this picture is not the Very Easy sitting there. You're used to seeing those. But I want you to look at the other airplanes. There's some there built out of wood, some built out of fabric, and a couple built out of metal. But they're all Hershey bar wings with low aspect ratio. They're all airplanes that look old. And in 1977, when these 2 years after Dick flew that airplane in, these home builders started showing up. And that was the reason that it was such a big deal, is those are the only ones that were like that. Now, the next year, there were 42 of them at Oshkosh, and the next year there was 120.
How long does it take to build one of those airplanes?
Building one of those airplanes takes 1.5 wives. Well, that's the statistic. And I'll tell you, I am way, way ahead of the curve because I did 40 of them and I only used 4 wives.
You're a numbers guy.
Actually, I found the very best wife. Tanya, will you stand up and let me introduce you?
Hey.
I want to say something special about Tanya. This morning, we had a tent in the home builder's hall. We had a group of hundreds of people in there. And I asked how many people were seaplane pilots. And a pretty good number of them were. You know, they're here, they're interested in the seaplane I'm doing. But a lot of people raise their hands. And I mentioned that there's only 35,000 rated seaplane pilots in America. Only 35,000.
Wow.
And I asked that group, how many in this room have ever held a private ticket that says single engine C, but it doesn't let you fly a land plane? That person hadn't yet got a private to fly an airplane with wheels. And I only got one person raise his hand. And you know who it was? My wife, Tanya. She started flying that little airplane on floats that was built 3 years after I was born. And she loved that so much that she wouldn't fly an airplane with wheels. And she went all the way and got her private license in a float plane that didn't have any wheels. Long story, but pretty soon she'll have a private license on wheels.
That's great.
Voyager? We talk about Voyager?
Yeah. Some of these things are before Voyager. Let's go and kind of finish them off.
No, great.
Because there is a Voyager slide, I think, in here.
Okay.
Keep going. This is what Oshkosh looked like back in the mid-70s and so on. There's a sign there, you probably can't read it, that says, "Very easy pilot bull session daily at 1 p.m. And I would go out there and spend about 2 hours, and it's all for pilots of the very... If people would crowd in that weren't a very easy pilot, we'd kick them out. And it was that kind of interplay had a lot to do with the fact that we had a good safety record. People that had problems, that's the best thing. Talk about it face to face.